Our next case of the morning is number 042004, the United States against William L. Bianucci.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Bianucci raises two issues in his brief. The first issue is whether the government proved that he intended to influence an FDIC-insured institution. It's the government's position that U.S. Bank and First Bank, they merged, was the lending institution here, while it is Mr. Bianucci's position that the Republic Acceptance Corporation was the relevant lending institution.
The only question I have had after reading the briefs for you, Mr. Martin, was why wouldn't the jury be entitled to rely on the loan agreement itself to find that the lender was U.S. Bank and not Republic?
Your Honor, I kind of forecasted that would be your first question, and I can't deny that there's a financing agreement out there that is in the name of First Bank and later U.S. Bank. That financing agreement was not signed by Mr. Bianucci. Two later corporate amendments, corporate resolutions that were attached to amendments were signed by Mr. Bianucci. And the reason why is because if you look at the course of dealings between the parties and you look at Mr. Bianucci's state of mind, in his mind, he's dealing with Republic. He negotiates the loan. He negotiates it with Republic Acceptance Corporation. I submitted as part of a supplemental record after government submitted their supplemental record the term sheet. And the term sheet very clearly is in the name of Republic Acceptance Corporation, as is the cover letter. And all the terms and everything that's going to be done by the lender, it's Republic, Republic, Republic. And so that's what Mr. Bianucci enters this transaction in his mind. And then during the course of dealings between the parties, he believes he's dealing with Republic. The advance authorization form, it's in Republic's name. The employees he's dealing with, they're all Republic employees. At trial, of course, they said, well, we're kind of associated with First Bank. But at the time, their business cards and their letterhead said Republic.
Were they employees of Republic and U.S. Bank?
That's a little unclear, because you look at their business cards, you look at the letterhead, it says Republic. And they would say, well, we worked for both. U.S. Bank was our employer, but we worked for Republic. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I think the reality of what happened here is that U.S. Bank, First Bank, was the parent corporation, and Republic was the subsidiary. And it was a little fast and loose.
These questions might be better given to the government, but is Republic a separate corporation?
I believe that it – well, here's the history on it. Republic originally was an unregulated –
I did read.
Right.
But I just can't get my hands around it.
I would think it is, because it was called Republic Acceptance Corporation. That certainly would imply that it was a separate corporation.
Then what would its corporate structure be in relationship to the bank?
It would be a subsidiary of the bank. The bank was the parent of Republic. We believe that one of the most important documents to look at are the BBCs, the base borrowing certificates, and those are the documents on which the false statements were made. And again, we've submitted these as part of the actual documents as part of a supplemental record. Right off the top, Republic Acceptance Corporation. And then at the bottom it says, to Republic Acceptance Corporation, and this is the certification signed by Mr. Bianucci, in compliance with the financing agreement between us, us being Republic Acceptance Corporation, and the Erickson Cosmetic Company. Jeff Adelson, who was the auditor and who was the compliance officer for Republic, and he testified he was a Republic employee, he was asked, was this a Republic loan? And his answer, which is quoted in the briefs, was this was totally a Republic loan. There was paperwork in a due diligence audit that stated that The first bank had an option to purchase 50% of the loan, but there was never any evidence that that option was exercised. The bank accounts to which the payments were made, it was at U.S. Bank, but the document showed it was controlled by Republic. So the payments were made by Republic. So while you had the financing agreements and while you had the amendments, if you look at the course of dealings between the parties, it's an Erickson-Republic transaction, and Republic was an unregulated finance company that it was in the business of handling higher-risk loans. It charged $85,000 for the closing here. That wouldn't be a closing fees charged by a normal bank. It was not a bank. It didn't take deposits, and it wasn't FDIC insured. So it's our position that under the White case and the White case, of course, is the main Seventh Circuit case, but the White case as well as the Fifth Circuit case that we cite, McDowell, that the convictions should be reversed. With respect to sentencing, there is to some extent a limited remand versus full remand issue in this case. And the reason why I say that is that at the sentencing hearing here, defense counsel made a motion for downward departure. And his motion was based on the fact that the loss overstated Mr. Biannucci's culpability in that he didn't line his own pockets. He just did this in the course of his employment. That the president of the company, who had also embezzled money from the company, received a 27-month sentence. And he asked the court just to impose a discretionary sentence, to use a just sentence. Now, he didn't phrase it in terms of the Fifth or Sixth Amendments. I will admit that. But after Booker, you don't need a Fifth or Sixth Amendment violation. The remedy in Booker is use your discretion with the guidelines as advisory. So we at least make the argument that this is a harmless error case as opposed to a plain error case. Even if it's not a harmless error case, the case certainly is appropriate for a Palladino remand. You have a man who had no criminal record, who didn't commit the offense to line his own pockets, who received a lot higher sentence than the president. And the district court even said the bottom sentence was heavy, that there are a lot of good things to say about this, and the bottom sentences in this instance were heavy. So at a minimum, we'd ask for a Palladino remand. And if there are no further questions, I know the court's been sitting for a while, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Hayes.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Brian Hayes. I'm representing the government in this instance. As could be expected, the defendant in this case, of course, is going to focus on some of the facts and the records that were in support of their theory that Republic is the lender and it was Republic. But I just think we ought to turn our attention back to what this court knows. The relevant question here is, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to government, could any rational trier of fact have found the elements beyond the reasonable doubt?
And who signed the loan agreement?
On behalf of who? On behalf of the company,
right.
Erickson, it was the president, Mr. Pickering. The defendant was the controller of Erickson Cosmetics Corporation, and the testimony at trial was that he was the person who was responsible for managing the relationship with the lender and that he negotiated these credit facilities with various lending institutions.
Who signed the loan agreement
It was a man named Barry Davis, judge, on behalf of the bank at that time.
Okay, on behalf of
First Bank in the loan agreement. He signs on behalf of First Bank.
Okay.
In the first loan agreement. Over time, once U.S. Bank acquires First Bank, or once the two merge, they then refer to First Bank, I think U.S. Bank, formerly known as First Bank. So all the loan agreements are signed by the bank.
So was the person who signed, Mr. Beck?
Barry Davis.
Barry Davis. Was he an employee of both Republic and U.S. Bank, or was he an employee of First Bank, or who's he an employee of?
He did not testify at trial, Judge, but I think that his answer would have been similar to what you see in the testimony from all the other employees. They sort of considered themselves interchangeably, it seems, as employees of U.S.
Yeah, but
Bank.
Here's someone who signs. What evidence is there that this person who signed was acting on behalf of the bank rather than Republic in signing the loan agreement. What's that evidence?
The only evidence would be the loan agreement makes no mention of Republic Acceptance Corporation. It's between Erickson Cosmetics Corporation and First Bank.
First Bank. Is Republic a separate corporation? I'm going to ask you the same question.
I'm honestly not sure exactly what it is, Judge. I mean, there was various testimony at trial that it was a subsidiary, that it was a division. They appear to have some sort of a marketing or service function for First Bank or U.S. Bank loans in this higher risk category. But it was very clear at trial that the loan was from U.S. Bank or First Bank, whichever name they were using at the time, and that it was U.S. Bank who took the loss. An employee from the bank testified that it was bank funds that went into these loans, and they lost millions of dollars as a result of the fraud that the defendant perpetrated.
Would you concede that if Republic had been identified as the lender, that Mr. Bonucci would have a really good argument?
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, who's identified as the lender is a different matter, because as I'm sure the court's aware, all the government would be required to prove is that the defendant made false statements intending to influence the actions of an FDIC insured institution. So if, for example, Republic had been noted as the lender, but the defendant was aware that they are essentially fronting funds of the bank and that the money is coming from the bank, and that his false statements were going to cause the bank, as happened in this case, cause the bank to increasingly lend more and more money despite the fact that there isn't collateral to safeguard the loan, then that would be sufficient, Judge. So I think to some extent, all of the concern about, you know, who is Republic, who is U.S. Bank, doesn't really matter in this case, because even if Republic did have some sort of a distinct legal distinction or existence, the fact of the matter is it's clear from the documents that the loan came from U.S. Bank. It was U.S. Bank who lost the money. And just common sense tells you that the controller of a cash-strapped organization who is lying about the collateral that underlies the loan is doing so to cause the bank to give them more money because the company needs it to stay afloat.
I'm trying to remember. Did Mr. Balducci Bianucci. He was sentenced to 41 months, 46 months, something.
I believe it was 57 months.
No.
46.
It's somewhere in the 40s.
Okay.
But
it was within the range, the agreed range.
But the president received 27 months?
The president received a lesser sentence because he agreed to cooperate. He admitted what he had done, and he testified at trial against Mr. Bianucci, and so he got a 5K departure, Judge. So he did receive a lesser sentence than defendant Bianucci.
And he also received money from the fraud, did he not?
Yes, he did. The other point I would make, Judge, on this issue of Republic versus First Bank is that the court should keep in mind that the defendant testified at trial. He put on these blinders in front of the jury and tried to state that he didn't understand that there was a bank involved, and that was soundly rejected by the jury when they convicted him over and over again of, as he was charged in the indictment, unlike in White, he was charged in this indictment with making false statements intending to influence an FDIC-insured institution. The jury disbelieved his testimony, and there is plenty of evidence to support that verdict. Moving on to the remand issue, unless there are further questions, Judge, we agree that a Palladino-type limited remand is appropriate in this case. So unless the court has further questions on that, I will conclude my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. How much time does Mr. Martin have?
2.5 minutes. I have 2.5 points. While the indictment did charge that the statements were made to the First Bank or the U.S. Bank, the actual statements were made to Republic Acceptance Corporation. So there is a variance between what was charged in the indictment and what the proof actually showed. So the government, while they repeatedly state that statements were made to U.S. Bank or First Bank, the reality of it was they were made to Republic Acceptance Corporation.
Is that because he was dealing with many Republic employees?
Well, because the false statements were all made on base borrowing certificates that were submitted to the Republic to
do you mean the term the sheets?
No, the base borrowing certificates, and that was the subject of each substantive count. And I would submit them as part of the supplemental record, and it's two Republic Acceptance Corporation, two Republic Acceptance Corporation.
Yeah, but those came after the actual loan agreement.
That's correct. The loan agreement was, the term sheet was in March of 97. The loan agreement was a couple months thereafter, and the base borrowing certificates mostly were in 98.
Mm.
In answer to Your Honor's question about Barry Davis, the testimony in the record was that he was Republic's relationship manager who worked out of Republic's Chicago office and supervised the loan. And then finally on the sentence, it was a 46.
So then how would he have had the right to act for First Bank?
That's our point. We don't believe he did.
No, I know, but... You're saying he saw, I mean, on this, not, it's not on the signature page.
The finance agreement he did sign. The government submitted that as part of the supplemental record, and I just looked at it. He did sign it.
And his official title was?
I don't think there was anything listed on the bottom of the finance agreement.
But you're saying he what? Tell me again what you said.
What I'm saying is that the testimony in the record was that he was Republic's relationship manager who worked out of Republic's Chicago office. And I'll admit, it was a little loosey-goosey on who they worked for. But I'm sure if Republic was sued, U.S. Bank would be saying, wait, separate corporation, you can't pierce the corporate veil. I'm sure the tables would be turned if that was the case. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bart. Well, thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.